I'm suiting up!
Welcome to Doctor 3, a Hearthstone podcast dedicated to giving you explosive growth in climbing the standard rank ladder. I'm your host, Daring Alkaline, and along with me are my fellow hosts, Nikolaius and Mage of Death. So let's get into it and talk about last week's poll question.
Sure. Poll question for episode 12, we were talking about trading or going face. We wanted to know, how often do you struggle with whether to trade or go face during a game of Hearthstone? 27 people were willing to answer that question, and 44% said once in almost every game. That was the top answer. 26% said once every few games. 19% said multiple times in most games, and then 11% are the true Hearthstone masters that hardly ever have that problem trying to figure out where they're going to go. So hopefully you got some information from last week's episode to help it so that maybe you're not having that issue quite so often. And we're going to be talking more about decision-making during the game today, and we'll have another poll question at the end of the episode for you to give us your feedback on.
So today, the Tombs of Terror launched today as well. Have you guys had a chance to check this out yet? I know I did. I made it to 7 out of 8 bosses, and then I severely got stomped in.
Yeah, the reason we're a little bit late recording today is I was distracted and didn't pay attention to the time, and I queued up a round of the Tomb of Terrors like an hour before we were going to start, and I thought that would be enough time. It turns out when you want to like completely one-shot the entire thing, it takes a little bit more than an hour, so I completely one-shot it.
That was one of the best humble brags I think I've ever heard.
It was really good.
Yes, he just said he took down the Plague Lord one shot. So there you go. The gauntlet has been thrown, as it were.
I
spent like a good 15 to 20 turns at 6 life on that boss. It was so painful.
Yeah, I hear you. Oh man. It's
nicely done, though. Nicely.
Yes,
done.
Congrats.
Thank
and
you.
And then, Mage, have you played it yet, or?
I have not. I was working, and the little bit of free time I had, I decided I'd rather lose on ladder, and so I did just that, and gonna try playing some of it here tonight after we're done, and then tomorrow on stream as well. So I'm looking forward to it. It looks interesting. I got to see a little bit of Kriparian play. And some of the treasures, I'm seeing tweets of some of the treasures too. They're freaking insane.
Yeah, sometimes they're really bad too. So
pro tip, there's this weapon that gives you like +2/+1 Wind Fury if you kill a minion. It's really good. Like really,
yeah,
really good.
It's good.
I have yet to see that, but yeah, I was playing as Reno, so I'm trying to do a Reno run first time through, and it's been a little more challenging than I had thought, considering the difficulty level I had with Rise of Shadows, the Dalaran heist. I one-shotted everything in there, so the difficulty is significantly higher if that's the case then. So I'd rather have it be more difficult than way too easy, because it felt kind of like last time, and I was like, this is still enjoyable, this is kind of fun, but like now I it's challenging, and decisions seem to matter a lot more, and the decisions are more challenging in my opinion. But I had a long day today anyway, so it could just be that I'm really tired.
How have the dual classes felt? That was one of the things I was thinking about going into this. Does it feel like it makes that much of a difference, or no?
It's fun. I think it's interesting. I don't know how much of a difference it makes, but it at least is more than just like pick one class and do it. So I feel like dual class always makes things just a little more silly and like interesting, because you're like, I'm playing mage and rogue cards, and like I'm my hero power combos.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, it was like mostly a mage deck with just a few rogue cards splattered in.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't remember playing very many rogue cards outside of like the pilfer you get in your deck to at the start.
And the storm.
But I
steel.
Picked a lot of mage cards from my draft at least. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just the way I drafted, but.
I found more success drafting mage cards over rogue cards too. So.
Okay. But initial impressions,
positive.
Yes. No.
Very, yeah.
Okay.
It was fine. Yeah.
I
don't buy the whole thing because it's just not worth it. As far as like packs to gold wise, and I don't really care too much about like getting the card packs and something. For like $20 or whatever, it's like $30 in Canada for it. So, but I just did the first wing. I'll probably go back and do the heroic one as well because I like to complete what I have.
Right.
But it was enjoyable. Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that. I just hate having the solo adventures and not being able to play them all at least once. And at least they've thrown in some packs to make it like. They're not just charging me to play it, which I'd be annoyed with, but probably still pony up. But I can at least justify it a little bit more with the amount of packs they throw in, and they threw in a free legendary, which is not as economical, but I like the content, so I'm going to pay for it. So that's where I'm coming from. So I respect your position, too, because I could see just not being at all interested in it unless they give it to you for free.
The
gold per paying with gold just has never felt like a really good, not a very good deal. And even though they've gotten better with the number of packs you get if you were to pay for it with gold now,
because like you get, what is it, like 18 packs or something, but they give you the first wing for free. So I'd be essentially paying like $30 for 15 packs, which is like absurdly low. That's $2 a pack.
Right.
So, yeah, even though you get like the golden pack and, you know, the free legendary, like, I don't know, just for me, it's not worth it. If you want to buy it and like you have fun in the solo adventure, then that's perfectly fine as well. I have enough fun on the rank ladder. So,
yeah, I hear you.
You must be winning then. That's how that works.
Yeah, how's that feel?
Kind of. I did get to Legend like last week, but it was like alternating days of just high tilt and like reasonable RNG. It's there was one day where it was like I lost like 6 MCTs in a row. My lackeys were awful, you know, all this stuff. And then the next day it would be like, okay, I'm actually hitting some good stuff right now. My MCTs are doing stuff. I'm not getting screwed by MCTs on the other side. So it ended up balancing out in the end.
Were you playing Quest Shaman then?
Yes, I was playing Quest Shaman. I have switched away. I've been trying like Highlander decks, basically what Trump has been doing. Like I tried out pretty close to his Highlander Paladin. And then, like, a day or two ago, I played his Highlander Hunter with, like, one change. And that deck was a lot of fun. I think that deck is really, really good. I ended up taking out a Quest Druid who drew both Ferocious Howls, both Hidden Oasises, Cenarius. I think he had, like, 3 Oasis Surgers. Oh, I ended up dealing, like, just to his fate, like over 100 damage in total that game. It was nasty. And I still had, in the bottom 7 cards of my deck, I still had Dino Tamer Bran, Unleash the Hounds, Snip Snap, and then the Questing Adventure, like, and Springfall. Like, I had a ton of good cards in the bottom 7 of my deck, and I still dealt like 100 damage that game. So, that's it might ridiculous. Be good.
It turns out it might be.
for those of you who don't get to see the video, this is me shaking my head in just utter disbelief. Probably what you're doing while listening to this as well, actually.
It turns out when your hero power is 2-mana bloodlust, like, you can deal a lot of damage.
Yes, it does.
It turns out that's real good.
Yeah. So I'll probably just spam, like, between that and the Paladin deck for, like, the next end of the month and see which one I like more and take that one to the ladder next month.
Cool. And speaking of MCT, we'll talk about that a little more towards the end of the show. Anyways, but let's move on to our main discussion this week. And we are talking about removal when playing a control deck. Last week, we talked about going face, when the appropriate time was, and how to know how to really run your game plan as a aggressive to mid-range deck. And I feel like we talked about it after the show that we wanted to talk about what that looks like, what your plan looks like on a control style deck, and how do you dole out your removal when going into a game. So I know Nikolai's brought this up, so I'm gonna let him lead off with the discussion.
Yeah, so when you're playing a control or combo deck, you only have a limited amount of removal. And it's generally a lot less than the amount of minions that you're going to go up against. In a typical like mid-range deck, you might have like 25 minions or so, between 20 and 25. And then the control deck that you might be piloting might only have 4, maybe 5 removal spells. It's been
unless you're warrior.
Yeah, there have been some exceptions. When you're playing Dr. Boom Mad Genius, all your mechs become essentially removal spells. I can also think of Big Spell Mage, which actually had like 12 removal spells.
Oh yeah,
mostly because it like buffed up Alana, and then you also had your hero power as the Frost Lich Jaina to kind of carry you into the late game. But generally speaking, you're looking at like 5-ish removal spells. And then you have your weapons if you're warrior. You have some rush minions if you're warrior.
hey, some other classes do have some rush too, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess.
But a lot of the questions come down to when to save your removal, either your single target removal or your AoE removal, versus like panic mode, I need to kill this thing. A lot of the math that I tend to do in my own head is like cost of doing nothing. So I'm going to give you like a really basic example. If you're going up as warrior versus a warlock. Okay, let's say you go first. They play a flame imp on turn one. You hero power, they hit you, they do some other stuff, and then it comes back to your turn. And you can either decide to use your shield slam or not. You know, you can hero power and shield slam and kill the flame imp. But the question is, when is it worth it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's evaluating, A, how long is it going to take for you to actually kill that flame imp? Is it going to take you 3 more turns until you know that you're going to have to brawl? Is it going to take you 10 more turns because you don't have anything else in your hand? You know, you don't know when your next removal spell is coming. The other thing is how much damage you're actually taking. So it's a 3-2, but your hero power is essentially negating 2 of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is that Flame Imp is dealing 1 damage a turn on top of whatever else is on the board. So how much do you need to panic and say, I can't take another point of damage? Does this make sense so far?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. There are some other things that you know, come into the equation? Like, if we're sticking with Warlock, do they have, like, the Grim Rally? Can they get down a Sea Giant? You know, these other things that having that Flame Imp on the board could impact. But generally, when you're just talking about the single, when you're talking about if you need to remove a single minion, it's, I just evaluate the cost of damage over time and then how much I can afford to take and when do I think I can actually kill it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something that I can easily say, like, in this scenario, every single time, if this is your hand, you need to be, you need to kill that Flame Imp, right? A lot of times it's just, you have a sense on what the rest of your hand is, you know what the rest of your deck is like, you know the statistics, you should know, like, how likely you are to draw a removal spell. Like, if you have, like, 6 removal spells in your 30-card deck, there's a over a 50% chance that you draw it by, like, turn 5, at least one of them. So, but then it's like, is it a Brawl? Is it a Warpath? How does that, but basically, it's just how long do you think it'll take you to kill it? Is that damage relevant or not? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you win with 20 health or 1 health. It doesn't matter. And then when you get into the AoE removal, it's a little bit more complicated because it's how you're generally dealing with board states that deal more than, like...
Can I interject one thing, too? I know we were just... You mentioned Flame Imp. But, like, what I think of when it comes to, like, single-target removal is not only what damage they're doing, is what effect they're having on the board. Mm. Like, Underbelly Angler, I'm going to do everything I need to do to kill that thing as soon as it hits the board. Because you're not going to be able to keep removing boards if he's able to just, you know, replenish cards as he plays them with the Murlocs. So, I mean, that's just the example that comes off to the top of my head.
Okay, I can talk about that a little bit as well.
I just wanted to talk about it on single target removal.
Yeah, so there are... Your opponent's deck is going to have specific cards that are more powerful than others. You know, you mentioned the Underbelly Angler. The other one I can think about is Northshire Cleric.
Mm-hmm.
Or Sorcerer's Apprentice and Mage. The Crystal Merchant and Druid. Like, all of those minions are must kills. So it makes sense to use a little bit more resources or use your panic resources to kill that must kill minion because it's generally more threatening than a lot of the other cards that they have in their deck. So if it's just a Flame Imp, then the only thing it's doing is damage. But if it's an Underbelly Angler or if it's a Northshire Cleric, yeah, it's totally reasonable to say, I need this dead now. I need to use, you know, turn 3 hero power or shield block coin, shield slam. You know, using like 3 cards to kill a 2/3, but sometimes it's worth it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally understand that. When you're evaluating larger boards, it's a little bit more complicated because there's more things that you have to think about. It's... If I don't brawl this, it may be 10 damage, but what if they have Bloodlust? What if they have Savage Roar? What if they have, you know, Soul of the Forest? What if they have Blessing of the Ancients or Grim Rally? What if they have, you know... You
mentioned the Sea Giant before as well.
Yeah, like, it's more complicated to think about how you need to manage your AoE removal. A really good example of this is a warrior versus token druid. You'd think that the warrior is like super favored, and it is favored, especially like last expansion, but it wasn't as overwhelming for the warrior as, you know, sometimes we've seen in the past. That's because the token druid can just make board, it could make more boards than the warrior was used to having to deal with. It could make like 3 or 4 reasonable sized boards leading up to turn 8. And then I had to, what was it called?
Forest Aid.
Forest Aid, which, yeah. made 8 more, which made 4 more boards. So the worry was, instead of looking at like having to clear, you know, 5 or 6 boards, they were having to deal with like 8, 9, 10 boards sometimes. Like, that's not a warrior deck cannot have that much removal. They just can't. So they have to aggressively put out their minions, even if it's not so efficient. They have to like use a single target removal on 2/2s. They have to hope that they get Dr. Boom in like not the bottom 10, and hope that their opponent doesn't have like every single one of their boards. Like, if you're, even if you're a warrior dealing with large board into large board into forest aid into forest aid into large board soul of the forest, like, that's too much for the warrior to handle most of the time, you know?
Yeah, so for sure.
Managing your removal in those games was so important.
Mm-hmm.
You had to look at the board and be like, am I dead to Savage Roar? No. Am I dead to Savage Roar plus Blessing of the Ancients? Yes. How much can I bet that they don't have it? It was a really tricky dance to take, you know? I need to kill this. How likely are they are to have the removal versus how likely are they to have a new board state? Because when you start to get to the late game, unless they had, you know, the Forest Aid, they really couldn't have both. It's just their hand would be too small by that point. Unless they, like I said, if they could get the Forest Aid, maybe they even have the second Forest Aid. You know, that's like 3 or 4 turns of them not really having to expend a card from their hand that can gather up more resources. So they're more likely to have that Savage Roar, the double Savage Roar, you know? So it was really, really important when you got into later stages that you pretty much had to have 2 removal spells in your hand at all times.
Mm-hmm.
You had to have a Brawl and you had to have a Warpath, because if they just went Forest Aid and you only had 1, you basically had to pray for the top deck. Or if you had just the Brawl and they made a large board and then they played Soul of the Forest, then you knew that you were instantly dead to the Savage Roar, double Savage Roar, at the next turn.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. The knowing what their breakpoints are, how likely they are to have those, that burst finish, was extremely important. This isn't just for Warrior. It's one of the reasons why Shaman was so bad against Druid. It didn't have that follow-up removal. You know, it's a little bit better now because it has, like, the dust.
Earthquake.
Earthquake and the Battlecry minion that deals 1 damage.
The Dust Storm Elemental.
Yeah. As well as, you know, all the lackeys dealing, like, super efficient damage and making boards out of nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
there's a lot more of that, for sure. Especially because you can bog slosher that back to your hand.
Yeah.
And do like 4 AoE to the entire enemy side of the board, which is, that's a flame strike.
Yeah. So I think what I'm really trying to say is that depending on the matchup, you really have to be conservative with your removal spells. But it's generally a really good thing just to be aggressive with your minions as a control deck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the hardest things for a druid to deal with, like a token druid to deal with on turn 1, is an Eternium Rover.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to kill not only their Acorn Bearer, but one of the scrolls as well. Or it's going to eat up a hero power. So you've just, with that one card, you've negated their first 2 turns. That gives you a lot of
time. I knew I hated Eternium Rover for a reason.
Because it's sweet. It's really good.
So that basically says that, you know, that ramp up time that the druid has, you know, they start assembling a board. They want to buff it up. They want to put Soul of the Forest. They don't have that. Like, that one card essentially accelerated the game 2 turns. And now that warrior is closer to drawing their rush minions. They're closer to drawing their AoE spells. So you're even closer to being able to play Dr. Boom. And that was the big break point. If they ever got Dr. Boom on the board, you pretty much lost the game as the druid.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because they could infinitely hold their removal spells. They could deal, like, not with the whole board, but they didn't have to deal with the whole board. They could just deal with two or three minions. Because that Savage Roll with two minions generally isn't going to deal, you know, 20 damage.
Yeah. And that Dynamatic does 5 damage to the board and then rushes in and does another 3. So it possibly clears out 3 minions for 5 damage or 5 mana.
Yeah.
And then you can have a second one. And then bam, there's your entire board gone. No questions asked.
So shifting a little bit away from Boria, because there are other control decks, and even combo decks have to deal with this. And they're in even tougher hands because they don't have as much removal, because a significant portion of the deck is reserved to their combo, whatever it may be. If I'm thinking Holy Wrath Paladin, you know, they have to have 2 Bankers, 2 Holy Wraths, and Shivala. That's 5 cards that's not really removal tools. And then the rest of the deck is cycle, pretty much. You know, they have 1 Equality, 1-2 Shrink Rays, 2 Consecrations, and 2 Pyros. That's like their entire removal for the entire game. You know, they have 1 swing of a True Silver Champion, because sometimes they need to save that second swing to deal that 30 damage. So how they manage their removal, when they say, okay, now I really need to clear this board, I need to deal with this board, is super tough for them to deal. It's a super tough game. You know, one of the most interesting matches I saw in Grandmasters, which I don't normally watch, but this weekend I did, and I was kind of disappointed. Psycho, whatever his name is, that was embarrassing. With Holy Wrath Paladin, nonetheless.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. That was a particularly bad match. I've been watching Americas more, but I was out of town pretty much all weekend, so I generally, if I miss it during the week, I'm watching it on my breaks and listening to it here and there. So
that's not the main thing to talk about. It was just embarrassing. But one of the matchups I did enjoy watching a lot was the Holy Wrath Paladin versus the Quest Druid. It was a super narrow dance of, I need to use timeout this turn, I need to use my shrink ray this turn, I need to use my quality, you know? And then the Quest Druid was like, I need to get a significant board every single turn.
Yeah.
Between their King Pharisees, their Floop, their Cenarius, their like double Oasis Searchers, Hidden Oasis, and the 2/3/5 taunts for 0. And whatever it's called. I think it's like Anubisath Defender.
Yes, Anubisath Defender. Yes, that's it.
So, like, the Paladin would cycle through its deck much quicker, and then when it got to, like, 3, 4, 5 cards left, the Druid had to start making, like, significant board states every single turn and just say, if you do your Holy Wrath combo, you are dead. And the Paladin had to essentially deal with the boards that it would present in the meantime. Like, you can't just leave up an Oasis Searcher. That's like 10 damage every single turn. You have to deal with it somehow. But you can't overcome it. You can't just use an Equality, because then it gets to like the late game. You're not going to have the Equality to get with like the first or the second or the third wave. Because they always have like 4 waves in a row. Like, you know, you essentially have to clear their board like 3 turns in a row and then have the timeout to combo with your Holy Wrath combo, because that's 10 mana, to make sure you don't die, and then can finish off the combo and hope that they can't like heal another 21 damage, essentially.
If they haven't used any of their Hidden Oasis and both their Innervates, because you can do that in a turn to heal for 24.
Yeah, that's still not is it? 24.
it would be for straight 50 damage. It's enough if you're at full life plus some sort of armor total, but that's not usually the case. You're going to take some damage as the paladin in that matchup, so you have to...
I think it would be lethal with a true silver swing.
Yeah,
that's but you do, you'd be having the taunts up, so it's kind of irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Oh no, it would be lethal with Zephyrus.
Oh, Zephyrus
with Soulfire.
Yep.
So yeah, having you'd think I'm not sure what you would have to do, but I don't think it's reasonable for the druid to outheal.
No, it's not. It's not. It's that's not the win condition. It's just a rare, weird possibility to.
I think the only way to out heal is with double ferocious howl, the double innervate, and the hidden oasis. Like that's a really niche thing, and you want to use the ferocious howl to cycle. So you have to pick one or the other, right? The match I'm thinking about, they wanted to do with the heal plan, realized that they just didn't have the resources in hand to sustain it, and started using the ferocious house to cycle to get those large minions, and they essentially forced the timeout early, and the paladin died because they couldn't holy wrath on the final turn without dying.
There was a game like that in the Americas over the last 2 weeks, but the paladin won. Paladin was able to hold the resources for longer, and it was just, it was stupid how, like, that macro, it's a macro game plan. You have to know what you're going to do when you hit certain things, because if it's a quest druid, you're going to hit certain things, and it's a little bit easier to say in Grandmasters, because it's an open list format, but you have a good idea on ladder what you're going to face, or you should have a good idea. I feel like if you're playing a control deck on ladder, you really have to have a grasp of the meta. Otherwise, how do you know how to partition out your resources?
That's exactly. That's one of the reasons why aggro decks do so well on like day one.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they're like more refined or they're easier to pilot. It's because, one, they have a more basic game plan. Just going phase is easier than stopping you from going phase every turn. And two, what's that big target? You know, we mentioned like the Underbelly Angler. What's that big target in their deck? You don't always know what it is. It may change from expansion to expansion. You know, it might be the Underbelly Angler now, or last expansion. It might be something completely different this expansion. You know, so knowing when it's the I need to use my AoE now versus I can hold it. Well, what if they have the Bloodlust? What if they have, you know, what if this other card is the most important card in the deck and you've just given them a free opportunity to use it, you know? So it's much easier to use the aggressive decks at the start when things are more unrefined, and then as things start to settle, people start understanding these are the best cards in these aggro decks. These are the things you need to look out for. The control decks are able to more properly manage their resources, manage their removal spells to not die, essentially.
Mm. Well, I liked when you say manage your resources, because your life total in those aggressive versus control matchup, your life total is definitely a resource, because you can go, can I take this damage this turn? If so, yes, take the damage this turn, save the removal, and you're using your health total as the resource to help push you towards the end of the game.
Yeah, sometimes you have to use your health as a resource to bait them into making a bigger board, and then you say, ha ha ha, you activated my trap card or whatever, and you play Brawl. You
know? that has been... always my downfall when it comes to playing control decks is I don't properly use my health as a resource, and I tend to use the removals before I need to, and so then you run out of them, and then they have that board that you can't remove, and then suddenly you're just dead. But it, like, if you can set it up so that if you take 10 damage now and they play one or two more cards and they only have one card in hand, and then you can clear the board with the big flame strike or the brawl or whatever, then you're in a much more commanding position, because then they probably don't have the single card, unless it's Druid with Forest Aid. They don't have the single card that's going to present another big board like the board you just got rid of, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's only one health that matters, right? That's not to say that you want to go down to one health each game, but it's just saying that the difference between winning the game between one health and 11 health doesn't change. Like, you don't get extra stars for winning with full health. You know, it's one star unless you're on a win streak, in which case it's two stars, and that doesn't change. So, if you know that it will cost you a lot of health, but you're in a better position because of it, because you're able to use a more efficient removal, maybe instead of, like, let's think about the big spell mage, instead of using the Panic Blizzard on 6, you know, to stop you from taking 10 damage, you're saving that, and then next turn you're using the Flame Strike to actually kill everything. Mm-hmm. You know, that having that extra Blizzard might be the difference between life and death.
Yeah,
because you may not. Who knows when you're going to draw your next removal spell? You know, there are like I said, there's like 10 of them or something in that big spell mage deck.
Oh yeah. But
having the extra resource also gives you security in the late game. You know, it. Once you get to 10 mana, once you have access to all full mana crystals, and maybe even your Frostlich Jaina. Having the extra removal spell means that you can be a little bit more liberal with it when your opponent is starting to run out of their resources.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, and you get like a better hero power with it or something, you know? Like, it's not just, when you get to the late game, you can use your removal spells as more than just removal. You can use it as development.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on turn 5, you play Brawl, that's your entire turn. On turn 10, you use Brawl, and you still have 5 mana to do whatever the heck you want.
Exactly.
You know? Do that, and you play a Dynamatic, or you play a Zilliax, or you just play a Restless Mummy on the board, you know? Your opponent now has to answer that.
You start taking and then, over the game at that point in time.
Exactly.
That's actually why Rogue is so powerful, right? Because some of the cards that they have, not only do they act as small removal, they also act as development as well. Things like SI7 Agent, when you combo them, they can remove a 2 health minion and develop a 3/3 minion at the same time. Flanking Strike was a really good card because you could remove a 3 health minion and develop a 3/3 minion at the same time. And so those kinds of cards are fantastic. And when you can use them, Baited Arrow is another good one in the Highlander deck right now. Those cards are really good too, and leveraging those because the it's kind of a double an even bigger flip than just removing something. It's removing something and adding something.
Removing and developing, just that's always good when you remove their stuff and put your stuff on the board, so.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, for example, Arcane Tyrant and the Anubis Wrath Defender, and mm-hmm. now, you know, those are good cards. Playing a 0-mana 4/4 or a 0-mana 3/5, as well as doing something powerful like a Starfall, or even just a Nourish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how backbreaking is it for your Quest Druid opponent just to go Nourish on turn 6 and then play one or even two Anubis Wrath Defenders?
Oh, it's stupid.
I cry a little each time that happens.
Yeah.
You know, that's not really a removal spell, but using a Starfall in this example, you know, mm-hmm. clear your entire board. Here's a 3/5. It's your turn 6. Go. Well, crap.
Exactly. Yep.
You know, not many decks have a good response from that. You know, Hunter has probably one of the best with Unleash the Beast, but then you're just left with a 5/2, and the Druid has, you know, a lot more resources now with the hero power unlocked. So,
So one thing I would add, I think I've gotten a little bit better at using removal, playing in the arena, because the arena you have, you know, when you're drafting your deck, you get offered removal cards and you can take some of them. It's definitely more minion focused. There's less removal options usually available to you. And so you really have to think about how you're going to use them and when. And then, so I had to work on using my health as a resource and then, you know, trying to do the most I could with the removal I had, because it is usually very, very limited. And there, you know, it kind of gives you that idea of I don't really know what's in my opponent's deck. I know what's popular. I know what's, you know, what are considered good cards for the class, but I don't necessarily know if they're in the deck. And so, you know, practicing using removal or thinking about removal and that in the arena, I think is a great way to kind of practice and test that sort of thing as well.
Okay, so let's move into our poll question for the week. Nikolaus, or actually, Mage, I'm on fire tonight. Woo!
All right, poll question for episode 13. There's been a lot of discussion about our 3-mana, 3-3 friend, the Mind Control tech. It's seeing a lot of play right now in Control Shaman. It's kind of a removal, if you think about it, because you're taking a minion from your opponent's side and bringing it over to your side. Our question to you this week is, do you think Mind Control tech should be changed or Hall of Famed? Seen lots of people asking for it to be changed, seen lots of people saying it should be Hall of Famed. So I want you to tell us, yes, we need to change that battle cry. Yes, it should get Hall of Famed. No, leave Mind Control exactly the way it is. Or if you have some other suggestion for the Mind Control tech, hit that and reply and tell us what you think should happen to the Mind Control tech. And try and keep it PG, please. Or PG-13, at least.
I would like to write in that it needs to be Warsong Commandered.
It needs to be Warsong Commandered. Okay. We were talking before the show, Daring Alkaline and I go back and forth. Right now, I'm kind of sick of it a little bit because of its ability to get doubled with the Shaman Hero once they complete the quest, and I'm not really fine with that too much. So I'd be fine if it got the battle cry changed. You weren't as on that boat as I was there, Daring.
I could care less, no, honestly. I'd be fine if they just eradicated it to not affect me personally. That I'm cool with that. I don't even run a deck with a Mind Control deck right now. So literally all my decks, zero Mind Control decks. So like I don't have much of a dog in the fight. It doesn't particularly bother me. And even though sometimes I don't play around it, so, I mean, it's not one of the cards that has historically enraged me in Hearthstone.
So I was playing the Quest Shaman, and when it happened against me, it felt really, really bad. And when I did it to my opponent, the only thing I could say is, like, I feel so sorry for you. Like, I don't even feel good. I feel sorry that this card exists and this BS happen, like,
mm-hmm.
Yes. So, it should not happen. Like, congratulations on making a good board. Let me just take that from you. Shouldn't be.
Yeah.
That should be changed. Yeah.
Yeah. So we want to know what you think. Cast your vote. Let us know what you think about Mind Control tech, and we will talk about it at the start of next week's episode.
Excellent. So that's going to do it for us this week. So, as for our contest, I did not see any reviews as of yet on iTunes. So, guys, reminder, if you want to enter this contest, we're giving away 2 1-hour sessions, coaching sessions, with one of the hosts of this show. And all you need to do is enter within the next 3 weeks. Go ahead and put a review. Give us an honest review and the honest feedback. Put it on iTunes, Google Play. And if you could just let me know on our Twitter, Dr. 3 HS. I can go ahead and get your name, and we'll do a drawing in about 4 weeks once we go through the contest. So I will post a reminder on Twitter when the show goes live tomorrow. So just a heads up, and you'll be able to catch it there as well. You can also email us about it as well at dr3hs@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at Daring Alkaline. Nikolaus?
I am at Nikolaus123 on Twitter.
And Mage.
On Twitter at Mage Death, and Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you can catch me on twitch.tv/MageDeath as well as our Discord. Get in our Discord. If you're not a member of the Discord yet, definitely do that as well.
Yeah, get in there. You can go to our Twitter and find it as the top pinned tweet to just go ahead and get in. So that's going to do it for this week. Thank you guys, and you listen to Dr. 3.
Boom.
Boom.
Boom. Boom. Boom. Boom. Boom. Boom.